Good afternoon. This is Carol Moyle, Committee Assistant, Environment and Energy Committee. Today is Friday, June 24th, 1 p.m., Hearing Room E. Agenda for today includes a work session on Senate Bill 237B relating to the EFU zones and marginal lands.
Clerk, if you will please take note of those here, those not here are excused. We open work session on Senate Bill 237, and one announcement to make. Which is on page one of this bill that I engrossed, deleting lines 7 through 18, which is the definition of agricultural lands. It's not necessary to the rest of the bill. Essentially, the definition that is here is the definition that already exists for agricultural lands. So it wouldn't be changing anything anyway. It would just be an unprecedented, I believe, means of putting the goal into the statutes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Troop.
When I was initially reading this bill, I had the same question. I had some question on why that was even included at all. Given Beth's explanation, I will move the deletion of lines 7 through 18 on page 1.
Representative Troop moves that we delete lines 7 through 18. Any discussion?
Madam Chairperson.
Representative Priestley.
I'm embarrassed to admit, but I guess it's best to confess now, that the last couple sessions and the changed printing and so forth, I can't tell new from old language very well in these way the bills are printed, and I don't know. My question is this deletion the deletion of existing language or the deletion from the bill, or is this?
It's simply a deletion from the bill because this is the existing language for the most part in the goal. However, it is not existing language in statutory law.
So, by deleting it from the bill, we're not taking it out of the statutes. We're just
correct.
We're not putting it into the statutes because the goals aren't in the statutes, the language in the goals.
Well, is this existing language which is taken out of the bill, therefore the language remains? That's what I understood now, right?
Right now, this language is in the bill. What this language does is the language that are in the goals that is not statutory language and making it statutory language. So this would be new language in the statutes. By deleting it from this bill, we're not taking anything away from the statutes. Any further questions or discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll?
Oh, there's a motion?
Yes.
Representative Parkinson?
Do you know what the motion is?
Aye.
Representative Priestley?
Aye.
Representative Trahern? Representative Troop?
Aye.
Representative Anderson? Representative Bradbury? Representative Hill? Chair Hooley?
Aye.
Oh, sorry, Larry.
Aye.
Chair Hooley.
Motion passes.
Secondly, on line 19, there was a suggestion that the word agricultural be deleted. I think the reason for that was that they didn't want to give the misimpression that only agricultural land was covered, whereas essentially this covers mixed agricultural and forest. I don't believe this really changes the effect of the bill at all, and it's more a matter of perception than anything else.
Madam Chair.
Representative Troop.
So with the deletion of the term agriculture, the impact, the bill would impact agriculture lands and mixed ag and forest lands.
Yes, it would impact exactly the same land as it's impacting now. It's just that it would not look as if there were a limitation where, in fact, there is none.
Madam Chair.
Representative Troop.
Move the deletion of the term agriculture, line 19.
Representative Troop moves that we delete the word agriculture, line 19. Any questions or discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll?
Representative Priestley?
Aye.
Representative Trahearne? Representative Troop?
Aye.
Representative Van Leeuwen? Representative Anderson? Representative Bradbury? Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative Parkinson?
Aye.
Chair Hooley?
Aye. Motion passes.
Now I should mention that if I ever explain something inadequately from the people who were at the committee yesterday, or if I state something in error, I hope that somebody will pipe up, because I'm not trying to misrepresent anything that occurred.
I think what Beth is trying to say is sometimes it was difficult to know exactly what was being said yesterday.
Okay, I believe also that there was discussion of deleting page 1 of line 2, which
said... page 1?
Line 1 of page 2, which says no exception, which has been acknowledged, can be designated as marginal land. I think the point there was that if it's already got an exception, nobody's going to want it as marginal land anyway. In effect, it's beyond the pale. So that was deemed, I believe, unnecessary language. I don't see anybody shaking their head, so I think I must be right there.
Madam Chair.
Representative Troop.
Move the deletion of line 1, page 2.
Representative Troop moves the deletion of line 1, page 2. Any discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll?
Representative Trahearne, Representative Troop.
Aye.
Representative Van Leeuwen, Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Bradbury, Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Parkinson.
Aye.
Representative Priestley.
Aye.
Chair Hooley.
Aye. Motion passes.
Now we get to the hard part, the income test. There's still a considerable amount of dispute here. I do believe that there is one area which I think everyone wanted added to the bill, and that is if, in fact, there is going to be an income test, that some objective criteria be added. For one thing, with regard to the $20,000 that is here, the OSU Extension Service information could be used in order to arrive at that income. Am I correct there?
Madam Chair.
Representative Troop.
Wasn't that the Washington County suggestion?
Yes.
I looked at that, and I thought that was a pretty reasonable suggestion.
You might take a look at... I'm trying to find... Am I... Thousands of pages of notes here.
While you're looking, Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
I am... And I can't exactly put my finger on it. I've read all the information, but I'm not very comfortable with an income test. I really am not. I'd almost have to have an inflation escalator. I guess it could handle it for 2 years, but I'm just not very comfortable with the income test. We've had so much testimony about the difficulty of administering it and everything.
Madam Chair.
Representative Troop.
If we do establish an income test and do not put an escalator on it, I would think that it would, over time, make the test easier. And if we were, in fact, to establish an income test and put an escalator on it, it would either make it more difficult or at least maintain that same relationship to where we are today, given inflation. I would think that it would be appropriate to establish an income test, but not to put an escalator on it and give future legislative assemblies the ability to review it, rather than trying to build in an escalator that might take care of that situation over time. I think we've got to have something, got to have some kind of a test there. I think the income test is the only one that I could come up with, but I think that gives us maximum flexibility if we just do take a dollar figure and like you were saying, come up with some very objective criteria, such as the Washington County proposed.
Representative Parkinson, too, and someone may, from the counties particularly, may want to correct me, but it seemed to me that when we were talking about the income test, or at least the discussion I heard, and I did miss a couple of these discussions, and which I'm very sorry about, but it wasn't so much that there was the number or the figure, but how do you get that? I mean, how do you get the information for it? The testimony I always heard was, well, you're impinging on someone's rights when you go out and say, how much did you make on your farm and all of this. Whereas, Beth might be able to tell us what the discussions were, or someone from the counties, but if that is accurate, and you're talking about that income not changing off in the future, because it says an averaging of income, gross income, in 3 of the 5 years preceding the effective date of this act, 1983, so it's for... And once you found that income, it would be just for that period of time. And instead of asking people if you could use the Oregon State University Extension Service materials, that I understand is fairly accurate.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson, and then Beth wants to...
I'm not entirely comfortable with income tests, but certainly if we do have one, then this is the way to go, using the Extension Service, go along that.
Beth, you wanted to clarify something?
Actually, I'd like to ask a question of Dick, if possible, with regard to this test. I'm not sure I understand the meaning of it, and if it's to be drafted, I'd like to know the purpose of it.
Sure.
Dick, you have here gross income in 3 of the 5 years preceding the effective date of this act. In later years, presuming, if 5 years down the road, are we going to look back to 1983 and 3 to 5 years prior to that? Or do you mean, were you more interested in the 3 of the 5 years preceding the proposal for marginal land designation? I don't know why you use the effective date of the act.
Richard Benner from 1,000 Friends. It is intended to mean to be the way it reads, which is you use the 5-year period preceding the effective date of the act. The reason the farmers chose that language is to get in part at Representative Parkinson's point about inflation. If you look at a set period in time, those numbers can't inflate over time. Those figures are set, obviously, and they have been. And then after the effective date of this act, a person who wants to be marginal lands but actually has good land cannot then calculate to mismanage his land for a period of 3 or 5 years in order to qualify as marginal lands. That's what you don't want to open that possibility. So that's why you focus on 3 to 5 years preceding the effective date of the act. Now, in 5 years from now, if at that time some county still wants to take advantage of the marginal lands option, those materials that are put out by OSU that tell you what the average income and average yield was in that county by crop for that year is all still available. Its accuracy doesn't change over time. It's just sitting there up on the shelf.
Madam Chair.
Let Beth finish asking to get clarification. Go ahead.
Dick, what about farms that are not in operation at this time? No income test will be applied to those that were not in operation prior to 1983.
That were not producing any income in those years?
That I don't even know if the possibility, say there's some land out there that is not really a working farm right now, but becomes so after July of 83, there is going to be no income test that would apply to it because it was making no it was not producing.
That's right.
Okay. The income test would apply, it just would be that they would be under the...
They would automatically, it would not take anyone out of marginal lands, is what I'm saying, if the farm operation started up now.
That's
right. Madam Chair.
Representative Tripp.
It's a good point. Neither Fred nor I were reading the bill properly in our little dialogue that we had. Appreciate you bringing us back to the second part of that sentence.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair.
One of you over there, Representative Priestley.
thanks, Tom, for mentioning that, because I got confused here, and I want to get Dick to give me back, because from what you had said, it is, the $20,000 is, let's see, the land is not part of a farm operation that produced $20,000 or more, so if you produced less than 20, then you're likely, then you can move to the next square on your way to the marginal lands, possibly, is that right?
That's correct, Representative Priestley. However, in terms of actual practice, you're likely to get to the income test last. In other words, when a county works with this test on the ground, the thing they're most likely to start with is to identify the portions of the county where the inferior soil is. And if they find some, then they'll see which farms or which parcels in that area of inferior soils don't produce 20,000 or more. Or they're likely to start by going to an area in the county that they know has been broken into small ownerships. And they will identify a small ownerships area, and then they will look to see which properties in that small ownerships area don't produce the income. So even the way the bill is laid out, it sounds like the income test is applied first, but in practice it won't be. And it might be a good idea, and we talked about this yesterday at the committee, to restructure, just change the paragraphs around in this marginal lands test so it reads the way it would be used in actual practice. You would start with a small ownerships test or the low productivity test, and then when you identify some lands like that, then you apply the income test.
As the last thing instead of the first, and I think that's... Yeah, Beth?
I agree with that, Dick, when you're talking about when the county makes a decision to zone a large portion of land of several ownerships, say, as marginal land. However, when an applicant-initiated situation came to court, I would think that they would look first at the income because that could absolutely preclude someone from being in it. It would be simpler to begin with the income when you are only looking at one parcel. So since the bill, as it now reads, allows applicant-initiated and county-initiated designation as marginal lands, the test can be applied
either way.
Whichever way is most convenient.
If someone walks into the county planning department and says, I'd like to be part of a marginal lands area, the situation could be resolved very quickly if somebody at the desk said, well, is your land part of a farm operation that produced $20,000 or more in income? And if that person said yes, then the answer is, well, you're not going to qualify for marginal lands. And then you don't have to go through the other tests. It can work that way, too.
Madam Chairperson?
Representative Priestley.
I have to learn to understand this in very kind of short little bites. Now, as I've understood you to explain that income test in line 2 on page 2, it's a static thing, and it's specifically for the 5 years preceding this effective date. I'm under the impression that there's another income test that's not going to be static. It comes along later. Is that right?
There is an income test that is employed in the farm dwelling criterion that affects lands in EFU zones on page 4.
What is this manual you're talking about, this farm manual productivity from the Agricultural Extension Service or something? Is that another income test?
That would be used, that's what a county could use to determine whether a given piece of property produced this kind of income.
Not lines 2 and 3. That's a static thing, and you're not going to use a little sample for that, are you?
Yeah, you would use the Extension Service information to tell you what kind of production you would have gotten in the year 1981, for example, if you had 50 acres like this person does, 50 acres in wheat.
I see.
And even in 1993, that they're going to look back at that book in the 5 years preceding 1983?
That's right.
Okay.
Not likely that it'll be being used then. It'll probably be used. The counties that want to use it are likely to use it as fast as they can, or at least within the next couple of years. But
well, I guess I don't understand. What do you mean the counties are going to use it? Isn't this a dynamic process that will be going on in 1993?
Sure, it could.
And what will they use then for lines 2 and 3?
They have a choice. They can use whatever they want. But the language that Representative Troop was talking about would allow them to use the extension service information for those years, 1978 through 1983.
What else could they use?
Well, if the person wants to come in with the facts and figures and say, look, here's what I did during those years. Here are my income tax statements. If that's what the person wants to do, a county is allowed to rely on that information. But if the person doesn't want to come in with income tax statements, then the counties don't have to ask them for it. They can rely instead on the extension service information.
What Representative Priestley, what Washington County suggested on their amendments using the OSU staff was a local government may determine the gross income amount by using appropriate gross income data from the Oregon State University Extension Service for the type and acreage of farm, crop, and products in the particular marginal land area. So it doesn't preclude the counties from with someone coming in with their tax bill saying, here it is, folks. I didn't make $20,000 three of the last 5 years. I would like to be considered for marginal lands. That language would not preclude them from doing that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
Maybe Dick can, maybe he can't, maybe someone else can, but I would like to know the reasoning. I just can't get it straight in my head, the rationale why a particular piece of land, whether it's determined to be marginal or not, matters whether it's connected to a farm producing 20,000. In other words, you've got a 20-acre piece. Why should the fact that one person could own that alone meet the income test be a different situation than a person owning this 20 in conjunction with another 500 or something? I don't see the reasoning. Why is that?
Well, Representative Parkinson, I think I understand two questions in your statement. One is, why is there an income test when we have a small ownerships test and a low productivity test? Why is the income test necessary?
No, the question is, you've got a 20-acre piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
What is the reasoning why it should be treated different, whether it's the only piece of land that one person can have, or whether it belongs to a person that has a lot of other land with it, or it'd be a part of the farm? Why should that 20 acres be treated different?
If the 20-acre piece is part of a farm operation,
mm-hmm.
and it's being farmed as part of a very profitable farm operation,
mm-hmm.
why should that be marginal land? Shouldn't that be protected with an exclusive farm zone? You're familiar with farming in the Willamette Valley. There's a study that I could provide for you that was done by OSU that discussed agriculture in the Lynn Polk areas of the Willamette Valley. And what they found is that something just below 50% of commercial farms, that is full-time farms, 50% of them farm scattered parcels. They may be 500 acres or 200 acres, but generally speaking, it's not a 200-acre block. It's 100 acres here and a 20-acre piece there and a 30-acre piece here. And the farmers drive their equipment around to get to those parcels. So if you find an isolated 20-acre piece that's actually being farmed by Farmer Jones as part of his wheat or grass seed operation, and it's good soil and it's part of a going operation, should that be treated as marginal land or should it be treated as EFU land? And the approach of the farmers here is to treat that as EFU land.
Madam Chair. Let me finish up.
Okay, Representative Parkinson.
In other words, a farmer has a very profitable operation in Marion, over around Silverton. And down here 20 miles away, he owns a 20-acre piece of land that he doesn't even go near. that would exclude that land, regardless of what kind of soil it is, from being classified as marginal.
Well,
that's what you're telling me.
The situation that you're describing...
They don't have to be contiguous.
Oh, that's right. But the situation you're describing for me, I think the way it would fall out under the way this bill should be rewritten, and as Agriculture for Oregon has suggested it, is that 20-acre piece that you're talking about is not a part of that guy's farm operation. He just happens to own another 20-acre piece. He's not farming. He may also own a 15-acre lot in Silverton that's industrially zoned. That's part of the land that he owns, but it's not part of his farm operation.
Okay, the 20 acres that's 20 miles away, then he made $1,000 on it, so he is farming. So then it would be.
Then it's part of his farm operation.
Where do you break it off? I mean, would it be $100 or $5, or how much would this 20 acres separated by 20 miles have to produce to be part of a farm operation?
Well, if it is farmed as part of that farm, let me describe a situation that I think would fall on the other side of the line. Let's say the guy's a wheat farmer, basically, but he also has a 15-acre piece that is in one of these small ownership areas, and he owns it. He may lease it to somebody next door who has corn on it. It's farmland in farm use. It belongs to him, but it's not part of his farm operation. Or let's say he's got corn on it. Maybe he has 5 acres of corn, but it has nothing to do with his major operation down the bottom land in Polk County. Now, if I were the planner applying that language, I would say, okay, that 5 acres can be marginal land because it's not being farmed as part of that guy's wheat operation in Polk County. On the other hand, if it's part of his grass seed operation, it just happens to be isolated, it's being farmed as part of his grass seed operation, and I would say that could not be marginal land.
Well, who will make all these determinations? Will it be the courts or the counties or who?
Well, it'll be the counties in the first instance.
Madam Chair, in the first place, if it's going to grow corn, it wouldn't be marginal land, but anyway.
Elizabeth is just dying to come up and explain some language here, I can tell. Yes, Beth?
Elizabeth, can I ask you one question to start? I'm having a little bit of confusion over Dick's testimony, only because the way he's describing part of falls more to me into the language of contribute. So anyway, I am not clear on what you mean by part of a farm operation. By this, I thought you meant it was you have a piece of land and you're talking by part of, you mean there's a corner of it or a segment of it. That is part of the land. That is what the language said to me, so I'm trying to...
Madam Chairperson, Elizabeth Norman, Legislative Council. This currently just says part of a farm operation, so that the situation that Dick was describing where it was part of someone else's farm operation but owned by a person who wanted it declared marginal land, I don't think would fall into it if you want to describe it as the farm operation of the person who would like it designated as marginal, then I think we need to change the language.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Maybe I oversimplify things.
I want to talk to this. Your name is going to get there.
Elizabeth Norman.
She's from Legislative Council.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Anderson, and then...
I think I've talked to you, Madam Chair, about this before, but maybe I oversimplify things. But it seems to me, if it won't grow trees and it won't grow corn, it ought to be marginal. Now, I don't know why we have to get all involved in the rest of it. Income tests, etc., etc. Is there something I'm missing that land that won't grow trees and won't grow corn should not be marginal?
Madam Chair?
Lois is shaking her head.
Madam Chair?
Representative Tripp.
Those of us east of the mountains live in areas that might not necessarily grow corn or watermelon or cantaloupe or some of those kinds of products. But we certainly have some awfully good grazing land. We have some awfully good pasture land that can... in some instances, carry cattle, carry sheep, maybe carry horses, maybe even carry llamas. I think there are other things than vegetables that one produces for the table. There are livestock and animal life and those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think that's a big hole, and there's where maybe you want to talk about an income test. So many animals are...
Well, I think there's another consideration.
So many, but
there's another consideration there too. What's the cost of providing public facilities to, if we were to do this hopscotch development all over creation? What's the cost to everybody else of providing the public facilities? There are some goals that deal with that, but I think that's a concern. Also, we've heard some of the agriculturalists come in time after time before this committee and indicate that if we take land that might be considered marginal, if there's a little piece here that might be considered marginal, if we are to urbanize all of those rural areas, those agriculture areas, by allowing that kind of development out in rural lands, agriculture lands, forest lands, that we're going to have an impact on the ability of those lands to be able to continue to produce Oregon's number one industry and Oregon's number two industry. So I think we have other considerations other than just the soil type or whether or not that land or the whatever we want to define marginal as. I think there are other considerations that we have to take into account. I don't think we can simplify it as much as your statement.
I think, Representative...